The welcome back to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the Coast Salish territories. I'm Robin. I am hosting the show today in a very loose format. No guests, no interviews, a lot of music, and a couple of little tidbit information pieces for your ears today. Let me tell you, though, who we listened to musically in that set. We just heard from Aura Kogan, a track called High Noon from the album Formless. We heard before that two Sarahs, Sarah Burton with Today Is Gonna Be the Day from 64 Magic Queens. Love the title of that record. And something a little bit more country from Sarah Siegel Lazar called For Good from the album Valleys. Excited to officially announce that we've got a new show starting this afternoon from 1 to 2. If you've been listening to CJSF for a little while, you'll have heard Mike's voice on the open mic program, and he is taking it over in an official capacity with the name Noise of Carpet. And it's going to bring you indie noises from the 90s, as well as some new finds that sort of pique his ears up in one shape, way, or form of another. And you should tune in 1 to 2 today. It's brand new. And officially brand new. All right. This is a little old, and it feels a little older, even, knowing that we are so full on into non-peace building and non-peacemaking right now in the Middle East. But the UN Women's Advisory from the Department of Peace, Department of Political and Peacebuilding Affairs sent a press release just the last week of October, marking the anniversary, the 23rd anniversary of a resolution 1325 that was passed in 2000. That was a landmark recognizing the impact of conflict on women and girls and the importance of women's leadership in peacebuilding and peacemaking. And unfortunately, the resolution has seen some progress, but not enough in terms of the participation of women in peace processes around the world. It still remains very low, despite the continuing disproportionate impact of conflict on women and girls. As of 2022, more than 600 million women and girls live in conflict-affected countries. And that is a 50% increase since 2017. And I'm not sure if now in 2023, that number, like what the ratio of percentage of numbers that goes up to. But the reality is that it's way, 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 way more than it ever should be, right? The reality is that civilians worldwide need greater humanitarian aid than ever before, but countries are instead increasing military spending, which in the U.S. topped $2.2 trillion in 2022. And so there were a few events to not only commemorate the landmark resolution, but also to, I think, try to spearhead, some of the ideas and the efforts put forth by the Department of Political and Peacemaking Affairs with the UN and UN Women, and what they're calling for. Generally speaking, their work focuses on four priorities. One of them is to have a gender sensitivity to political and conflict analysis. That's really tricky because there's no kind of definition that is singular about how gender is understood through this lens. But gender equity is the number one predictor of peace in their estimation. And the fact that inclusion and meaningful participation of women in conflict prevention, mediation, and peacebuilding processes is fundamental to the full realization of our, I'm going to call them there, but I'm one of these folks that we're talking about. It's one of the fundamentals to full realization of our human rights. They also promote inclusion and women's meaningful participation in all peacemaking and peace building, which is what I just commented on. They also promote women's participation in electoral and political processes, which is really important to the whole effort in general. And they do work to prevent and address conflict-related sexual violence as a priority for peace. Critical, critical work there. Again, I will post a link to the page where you can read more about what Women, Peace, and Security is all about and what they do and how the Department of Political and Peacebuilding Affairs does certain actions and where you can learn a little bit more about that. We're going to listen to a couple more pieces of music, I think, just to take us out of the show. We've got Democracy Now! Coming up at the top of the hour, as we always do. And maybe just to change up the tempo a little bit, we'll listen to a little bit of soul music. How about that? This is from Canadian artist Katie Tupper off Where to Find Me and a track called Comfort here on Intravenous.
Thank you. bird note. Wren or robin, finch or chickadee, most birds love a good bath. Bigger birds, too. A cooper's hawk may stand and splash in a bird bath for half an hour. Bathing helps keep feathers in prime condition. Some birds get the fluids they need from their food, but many birds need a drink at least twice a day. In natural settings, birds may drink or bathe at the shallow rim of a pond or stream, or in puddles. We can recreate this in our built environment by placing bird baths at different heights, including right on the ground. Small birds may visit only shallow bird baths, an inch or two deep. Putting rocks in the bird bath gives birds a place to rest and preen, and keeps insects from drowning. Water is important not only during hot or dry seasons when it's in short supply, but also during the cold season when natural sources may freeze. Water is essential for birds, and supplying clean water for them to drink and bathe in is a great way to help maintain native bird life.